Hello, everyone. Welcome to a new episode of the Good Faith Idea Exchange. For today's episode, I'm bringing back a couple old friends from the military, Tyler Kerrigan and Aaron Desjardins, and we are talking about the Titan sub that was very unfortunately lost just a few days ago. And basically, we're talking about this from an insider perspective because we each served on the same submarine together when we were in. So you're getting some information here that you're not going to get from most people because we're talking about this from kind of an insider perspective. So give it a listen.
So the game controller thing keeps coming up and I'm like, well, no, to be fair.
We'll get to that because that's not a concern.
It's a whole nother point. Yeah, it's not. Anyway. Give us a quick rundown of kind of just what happened.
So basically at this point, CNN reports the Titanic bound submersible that went missing on Sunday with five people on board suffered a catastrophic implosion, quote unquote, killing everyone on board. U.S. Coast Guard Rear Admiral John Mauger said Thursday, a remotely operated vehicle found the tail cone of the Titan about 1,600 feet away from the bow of the shipwreck, he said. Several notable individuals were on board, and about the trip, the submersible was descending to explore the wreckage of the luxury liner located 900 miles east of Cape Cod and about 13,000 feet below sea level. So this tiny submersible was trying to go extremely... and do an extremely deep dive.
Yeah, would you, just out of curiosity, would you guys do that? Not necessarily like, right, like if you were getting on to, say, the one that James Cameron used, because he's been to the Titanic like 30 times or something crazy, right? But like, right. Would you guys, having been submariners, right, and you know to a degree like what it's like to do deep dives, would you guys be like, yeah, I'll do that? Because I don't, 13,000 feet is not a place I think you would catch me.
It's hard. Because with the recent tragedy, it's hard to like put yourself in their shoes, but...
I mean, I'd like to see the Titanic. I think that would be super cool, right? But like...
I think I would do it, but not
that's
with...
That's real deep, man.
I would do it, but not with Ocean Gate.
Well... I don't think you'll have that opportunity. Even if you had the money, I bet the company is about to go away.
Yeah, that probably
totally a guess.
And actually, the CEO, Stockton Rush, of Ocean Gate Expeditions, he was one of the five who died in the implosion.
I didn't realize that.
He was piloting the vessel.
Yeah.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah. If you didn't read closely, this was a sad event. Like, it's devastating, like, that people lost their life, but it was so unavoidable that it's, for you, we all three wore dolphins on our chest. Like, it's going to piss you off. All the shit that you learned, like, going through the whole year-long process of getting your submarine warfare device, it's going to piss you off. Everything.
The only thing that I've heard, and this could be total hearsay, right? So, again... I'm just here more to listen and comment where I think it's appropriate. But I did hear that it was like not certified at all for what it was doing.
No.
Which is a major red flag if you're someone who's going to go to a depth that will literally like just, I mean, you're insta-dead if you know, if the hull cracks, like that's a wrap.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's just... That's a long way down. And I don't think, my wife was like, you know, would you do something like that? And I said, maybe, but there would have to be a way for them to like retract you because like even like the smallest mechanical failure, right? You could find yourself like without propulsion. Right, so I was like, maybe if they had like a giant winch with like a steel cable and 13,000 feet of cable would be a ridiculous amount. But when you're talking about the means that some of these folks had, like that's a thing that they could have arranged. You know what I mean?
Well, I've got to say just real quick, if it were me and someone posed that question to me, I would just give them the quick answer of no.
And, no, I'm not doing it.
No,
I like that. I like how simple that is. Like, no, I'm good.
Yeah.
So basic submarine construction that we all are familiar with. The only way to open up the hatch, like the front door of that submarine, was from the outside.
I heard about this. It's like bolted on, right? There's no...
You can only do it from the outside. There's no
way for
them
to come out.
They could... Yeah, even if they could emergency surface somehow, if there was a casualty...
You're stuck out there until someone retrieves it.
They're still running on, the oxygen they have inside the vessel itself.
And there's no CO2 scrubbers, right?
I think they have a way to circulate the CO2, but not like what you're thinking, like what we had, where you can scrub it and then dump it offboard and whatnot.
Yeah. That was something else that I had read. And so, because someone who is like not familiar with submarines at all, were like, what's a CO2 scrubber and why didn't they have one? Like, why is that a big deal? And I was like, it'd be a big deal because human bodies put off CO2. And if you can't get rid of it inside of an enclosed tube, you'll die. That's why it's a big deal.
That was one of the questions I kept getting a lot of, like, people, my command is a lot of surface people. So people keep asking me questions about how, like, all that works. And I was like, well, if they're still alive and they have 40 hours of oxygen left, they're probably passed out the amount of CO2 that they have in the vessel.
Mm-hmm.
They have like massive headaches, probably passed out, probably puking. Like, there's a lot when you have high CO2 and low O2, like, I mean, it's not a fun experience. And I even told them, and I'm sure you guys had the same thought as when you first heard the report that they were descending for almost 2 hours and then they lost comms. I bet you any money that your brain was like, there's a hull rupture. They imploded. They died as fast as you could possibly die.
I didn't assume it was a hull rupture. I think a lot can happen, right? Like, it's creating communications from 13,000 feet is like, there's some technical feats that need to occur for that to happen, right? Like, radio waves don't work underwater well.
No, so they had two forms of comms. They had like basic SMS, like text messages.
Sure. How did that work? How did that get to the surface?
Something, I couldn't tell you the details, but the other one was a 15-second, I believe it was, or 30-second ping.
Okay.
Which can be heard.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's what they lost, was like after the hour and 45, they lost that ping.
Okay.
Which, you think about it, right, basic submarine stuff. Okay, you lost a ping. You have no power. Well, why don't you have power?
Yeah, I don't know. How was this thing powered? Batteries, right? I imagine.
I believe so. I think it was lithium, like 24 volt.
That's the same shit they put in a vacuum cleaner. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Interesting. Well, okay. So yeah, my first thought was not implosion. I figured, the scary part, I guess my brain went to worst case scenario, which was like they lost propulsion and were like literally sitting on the bottom of the ocean with like no communication. And like you said, maybe 40 hours of O2. I would much rather have an implosion and die instantly than that.
Yeah.
There's been weird news reports too. Like, people don't understand how that works. Like, they're talking about like, are we going to recover the bodies? It's like, no, like they're ash.
Not from that depth. Right.
No, they're like, they're done. Like, that's
I think most people though that are asking that, they're coming from the standpoint of like, a lot of surface ships, when they sink, right? Because it's not the same pressurization.
It's not instantaneous.
You can go down and recover bodies. Same thing with like submarine, disasters that have occurred in shallower water. It's just not the same. But yeah, when you're dealing with that pressure.
When you're dealing with instantaneous equalization is essentially what it is, the diesel effect. Like, that's kind of...
Yeah.
I'm going to read you a thing. I pulled it up just because... I knew we were going to talk about this implosion thing and giving anyone who's listening an idea of what they went through.
I saw this, I think. Did you post this somewhere the other day?
I did post it.
Okay, I read this. This is super interesting to me.
The number one question I got, so I'm going to read it real quick. I'm going to pull it over here. All right. So when a submarine hull collapses, it moves inward at about 1,500 miles per hour. That's 2,200 feet per second. A modern... nuclear submarines, hull radius is about 20 feet. This hull radius was about 9 feet, I believe, for the Titan. So the time required to complete a collapse on a 20-foot submarine, like width, radius, is about 1 millisecond. That's a key number there. A human brain responds to stimulus at about 25 milliseconds. Human rational response, which is sense, reason, and act, is at best 150 milliseconds. There inside the sub has a fairly high concentration of hydrocarbon vapors. When the hull collapses, it behaves like a very large piston on a very large diesel engine. The air auto-ignites, and an explosion follows the initial rapid implosion. Large blobs of fat, which in this case would be people, incinerate and are turned to ash and dust quicker than you can blink your eye. It sounds gruesome, but as a submariner, like we all are, or were, I always wished for a quick hull collapse death over a lengthy one, like some of the crew on the Kursk endured. If you don't know what happened to the Kursk, that's a whole other topic. But basically, when it happened, which the hull ruptured, their brains didn't even register that there was anything happening.
That something occurred. Yeah,
lights on,
gone.
Right. Lights out, done.
Which is crazy to think about.
Which is the way, I mean,
it's the best way you can go.
Yeah, it's of all the underways, and every single underway, probably on every single submarine, there has been a conversation about it. And like, that's the way you want to go.
Yeah. I mean, I think back to so I don't know if either one of you were on board the boat my very first day out, because I was there a little bit before both of you. And the very single first day that I went actually underway in a nuclear submarine, we had a fire on board. Right. Like in the first 8 hours. And I was like as junior as junior could be. Like, I'd never been underway, and we had a fire in the room adjacent to a giant stack of torpedoes in the first 8 hours I was underway. And I was like, I'm going to die. Like, this is it. And that scared me, right? Like, being fires on the submarines, that's a problem. Because of the oxygen thing, right? Like, forget the fact that there's torpedoes there. Like, they don't have a lot of air to breathe. And fires consume oxygen way faster than people do.
They do. And also, submarines are small spaces, and filling up with smoke, it happens very fast.
Yeah.
You can't see 100%. Anything.
Super
disoriented.
Scary. Super heat, scary. Like, so, yeah. Like, that was something that scared me about being underway. And then the other thing is, like, just as you learn more and more about submarines and the way that they operate, right? I didn't grow up someone who was like around mechanics, and I mean, DJ, you know this from our friendship, right? You had to teach me how to do some pretty basic mechanical stuff with my car, but that wasn't my upbringing. And so, like, having the realization is like I'm walking down the passageway, right, in my everyday living space while we're out there, that like there's 3,000 pounds of air right beside my head, and if that pipe ruptures, I'll die. That's it. It'll cut my face off. Same thing with like hydraulics and stuff like that, right? Like, just you realize all of a sudden, man, like if somebody fudged up the construction of our piping or fitting, or you know, it could be so many number of things, right, that the SubSafe program touches. But like, if something was wrong, like it's just major disaster territory. Like, you're.
And that's kind of why
constantly surrounded by super dangerous shit.
That's like the whole, if you take back all the knowledge checkouts that we got for getting our fish and all that, it boils down to, do you trust the guy who's running on 3 hours of sleep for the past 2 days to replace a fitting that if fails could sink the ship? Right?
No. I'll answer that. No. I've met people in the Navy, and a lot of them are fucking idiots.
But the point is we have programs in place to ensure that we're not going to die over something like that. I mean, the SubSafe has been in effect since, like, what, the 1960s, the 70s?
It was in response to a particular submarine.
In response to two particular things. It was in response to the USS Thresher, which went down, I believe, in 67. I could be wrong. I feel like I'm wrong. And then the USS Challenger, but the Challenger went up and exploded in flight because of an O-ring, a simple little O-ring that's probably cost 50 cents, cost the lives of all those people that were on board. That's crazy. The Thresher went down in the 60s. I know that.
Yeah, it was the Thresher. It was I'm looking on Wikipedia, so God knows if this is actually 63. True or not, but yeah.
April 10th, 1963.
Mm. Okay.
Yeah, and Subsafe has been in effect essentially since then. So you're thinking of a program that's been in effect for, what, 60 years?
Yeah.
I've been drinking, so my math might be wrong, but no, a long time. A very long time. Also, yeah, think about it. Deep sea submergence, if you want to just cut out the Navy submarine part, deep sea submergence, they've been doing that. The Trieste went down to the Mariana's Trench in the 60s, I believe.
Yeah. I don't feel like deep sea submergence, though, is something that's as explored as people might think it is.
It's not, but the technology has been established.
Right. That's true. A lot of people, I think, feel like everyday submarine operations are deep sea submergent stuff. And without like jumping into territory that I shouldn't be in, I've just had to explain to people that it's not generally like that. You know what I mean?
No,
like,
our normal day to day on a Navy submarine is not even close.
Not remotely close to. 13,000 feet would scare the shit out of me. I'll say that. It would have been exponentially further than I've ever been.
Yeah.
As someone who spent 6 years on the sub.
Yeah, and that the depth of submarines is something we have to keep
close
to our chest.
We can honestly kill the conversation about that now because I think the point has been made. It's just not the general depth.
History lesson. The Trieste, or Trieste, whatever you want to call it, was a DSV, the first, like one of the, probably the first deep submergence vehicle, went to the Mariana's Trench on 23rd of January, 1960. They used gasoline.
Yeah, I was like, I bet that was a sketchy descent.
Well, they did it more than once, too. They Trieste always came back. But the technology for that whole aspect of exploring the ocean has been established since that day, 1960. Like, it's been a fact. And this thing, the Titan, and I don't want to bash on OceanGate a whole lot, but they're so at fault, it hurts.
Do you feel like that this was essentially like more of a recreational thing? Like it was cheaper and more recreational and probably should not have been doing what it was doing? No,
the thing is, it was never certified, right? So no one who was an expert in this field came out and was like, that thing is safe. It was the opposite that happened. People who worked for the company, OceanGate, were like, this is not safe. People in different establishments who do deep submergence said it wasn't safe. And this is years in the making. It's like 2018 until now. And people have been saying how unsafe it is.
But to be fair, people have also been, like, I saw a report yesterday that somebody was like, I mean, we just went to the Titanic on this thing in like 2019.
So what?
And it was fine. Like, it worked out.
The hull is made out of carbon fiber and has two end caps made out of titanium.
Okay.
So carbon fiber and titanium share some similar properties or aspects. There's lack of a fucking better word.
But rigidity.
They're both very strong, very light. Very expensive to make and whatnot, but
not terribly flexible though.
No, once they buckle like at all, that's it. That's done.
Like carbon fiber shatters when
it does.
It's
titanium
under.
Is almost is damn near the same way.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever messed around with titanium outside of like a wristwatch, and it was just like, so, wow, this is so much lighter. But
the Russians had Alpha Class way back in the day, and they were made out of titanium. And basically, once that boat went down to test depth, they could never go to that depth again.
Oh, okay. Why?
Because the titanium changed
so much
its structure, essentially. So if they went to that depth again, there could be a catastrophic event.
I gotcha.
Right. So
it was like it withheld the pressure, but it was like a one time.
It's a one
thing.
And done because it's so malleable. Unlike steel, once it's set, usually it's set until it's not set. That's why U.S. Navy submarines are all made out of steel.
Yeah.
High tension strength steel.
And four trucks.
Trucks are made out of aluminum now.
Did they change it? It's not the same. Do you remember when they had the commercial of the submarine breaking up through the ice and it was like made out of HY-80? Wow.
to give you an idea, so the best DSV on Earth right now is the DSV limiting factor. I won't go into who owns it.
And when you say it's the best one, why is that? Does it just have like the most successful dives?
It has a lot of dives, very successful dives. But so the deepest part of the ocean is in Marianas Trench, which is 35,000 feet. How? What is that in meters?
It's staggering. Meter is roughly 3 feet.
Well, no shit, I know that, but.
So just divide it by three, man. It's like 10,000 some odd meters.
So deepest part of the ocean is 10,935 meters. So the DSV limiting factor, which is also made out of titanium, but only titanium, is rated to a depth of 11,000 meters. So it that point to where it could go so deep that it buckles and it can never go that deep again is impossible because it's rated deeper than what the ocean is.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The Titan, I've been looking it up and I don't know. It's rated for the depth of the Titanic. That's all they can give you. There's no, because they never did any testing. It any was. Destructive it was hull rated testing. For. Yeah, right. Exactly. But it never was any destructive hull testing on the vessel itself. And somebody brought this up. One of their employees brought this up a couple years ago and they fired him and sued him over it. And he's like, hey, this is going to kill somebody. And they sued him. Hmm.
Well, what comes around, right? Like it's somebody is probably going to end up in that hot seat again shortly.
Well, the person who deserved to be in the hot seat is unfortunately the guy that was on the boat when it went down.
I would bet you. I mean, even though CEO probably did have something to do with what happened to the employee, he probably wasn't alone in that.
Yeah.
Generally, employers don't complain directly to their CEO, or employees don't complain directly to their CEO.
He filed like a report.
I see.
Interesting. And they fired him. And this was, and then I believe shortly after this, a deep submergence group wrote a letter expressing their concerns about them not getting certified by anybody. And I think 24 members of this group signed it. And the Stockton Rush, the CEO, like kind of like brushed it away. And then he said something about, how they're trying to hinder innovation. And this is not a direct quote, but something like that. And then there's been a lot of stuff coming out about it. He refused to hire submarine veterans.
Whoa.
Interesting.
Okay. Right. That's right. Cause you think it would like submarine veterans that, oh, they kind of know how this shit kind of goes and how it works, even though submarine veterans don't operate in.
Yeah. I was going to say
depths as. But we understand the basic concepts of
right. The knowledge would be generally applicable, but like if you went to work for a deep submergence company, you would have to definitely kind of shift your understanding of principles to that specific mission.
Yeah. And he also, but he only hired people like fresh out of college who had no experience in the field.
See,
you got to have see, a mixture. That's
right? So when I said earlier, when I was talking about how preventable this whole thing was,
mm-hmm.
Yeah,
he's lucky that he had enough of an audience to realize and to get those complaints like, hey, look, this isn't safe. But he brushed it all the way. And and I don't know how true this is, but I think there's some regulations about how to do like deep submergence stuff. And that's why it operated, it was hauled out there by a ship that was flagged in another country, and then it floated out in a barge, and the barge kind of went down, and the DSV went down, and that was like some kind of loophole, so they weren't required to get certified because of the way they were doing it.
Interesting.
See, I mean, honestly, like to me, when we talk about like how preventable this was, like the first time I had heard about that, like about how preventable anything about how preventable it was, it kind of made me think of like the weirdest thing is it kind of made me think of that Rust, the movie Rust, that the shooting with Alec Baldwin,
mm.
In terms of like preventability.
There's so much basic shit that could have helped not have this happen. Yeah.
It just feels to me like at so many junctures, something could have happened that could have changed this, where that never needed to happen. That never would have happened.
Tyrone, yeah. something like, I mean, as you're saying that, that's a good point. And this is going to maybe send you both into weird PTSD spirals, but there's something that people used to always say, right? That was super annoying at the time, but the trust but verify was like a Navy.
Sure.
A Navy thing. And like when you're in it, it's kind of like, yeah, dude, I get it. Right. You know what I mean? Like you're double checking, but, I mean, I think about that shooting sometimes too. And it's just like, you know, you trusted that when you're handed this thing from the prop department, things are fine, right? You can go about doing it however, but the truth of it, right, is that if you take a firearm into your hands and you're pointing it, especially at another living thing, whether it's a person or an animal or whatever, like it's on you at this point, and you need to know how that works and whether or not the damn thing is real or if it's loaded or whatever, right? But like, that's your decision now. And yeah, same thing with something like this, right? It's like, DJ, if what you're saying a second ago is that like the CEO received complaints and was told multiple times from multiple people that like what we're doing is not safe. I mean, you should listen to the experts that you surround yourself with. And then B, it's like, you got to test that stuff out before you let people hand you money for a service and you take them out to do something.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I mean, he at least, I will say, the fact that he went down on the ship tells me that he himself trusted in the equipment. It wasn't like he knowingly was like, oh, that thing's a piece of shit, I wouldn't get on it. You know what I mean? Like, he right. at least was out there and was like, okay, no, I think we're good. I think we're safe. So I don't think there was any, like, bad faith, right? Like, I think even it though it was malicious. Irresponsible,
yeah.
It wasn't malicious. Yeah, that's what I'm trying to say.
I saw this thing, and it was about this. It was a father-son, like, duo, and they were supposed to be on this cruise to go down the Titanic, but the son brought up some safety concerns, and the CEO texted them, was like, well, we'll take $150,000 per person, vice the $250,000 it was for the other people to go through. And then he's like, well, you know, he still has some concerns. He's like, well, let me FaceTime. I'd be curious to know what an uninformed party thinks about this excursion. And it's like he was, and then he said something on the news and it made a whole lot of sense, but he was drinking his own Kool-Aid. That makes sense.
Oh, it sounds like a dickhead, truthfully, which sounds terrible to say about someone who died. But if you're like, oh, well, I mean, what would you know about it? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
People are paying you for a service. Like, don't be, you know what I mean? I don't know. Just don't be condescending about it. Like, you could at least just hear the guy out instead of being like, well, you're an uninformed party.
Even if it wasn't certified, the safety concerns, like, address them.
Yeah.
Like, because obviously carbon fiber is not innovation.
I mean, it is on a racetrack. I don't know about underwater. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And the thing is, it's weird because it's carbon fiber hull, like the cylinder part of it, and it has two titanium caps. Well, how are they mated to each other? How good does metal mate to carbon fiber?
At extreme pressure? Not as well as you'd hope.
Well, it turns out I did a little bit of research, but they basically had a carbon fiber hull, like cylinder shape, hull of weaved carbon fiber, which is strong, right?
Yeah.
And they had the two titanium caps. But to mate those titanium caps to the carbon fiber hull, they had essentially titanium rings. And then what they used was like essentially fucking super glue.
Okay. They can't use screws and bolts
because that would crack the carbon fiber, expand it, and weaken the structure.
Yeah.
So they essentially used like a glue. I don't know how to explain it, but glue.
Yeah, some sort of chemical bonding.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Which would be great at like, I don't know, 1,000 feet.
Yeah, I was going to say, it sounds like it would probably work in most cases, right? It's just...
Yeah, but at 13,000 feet where... Cases.
You're talking about extreme depth.
Square inch is equivalent to the weight of the Eiffel Tower. A square inch, right, roughly about the size of your thumb. Imagine the Eiffel Tower compounding on you. in every little point the size of your thumb.
Yeah.
It's a lot of pressure. I don't think people like fathom the amount of pressure that's being pushed on something that's made of carbon fiber, which D-bags with fucking Subarus put on their hood.
It's true.
I have to say, just real quick, I'm, you know, you guys had me wishing that I just didn't work out today so I could be drinking right now, too.
You can't be drinking. I told you the health benefits. Cancer.
It's true. You ran it at the beginning. Do you support cancer, yeah. Tyrone? If not, pour yourself a drink. I'm kidding. Live your healthy life, man. I didn't work out today, so.
Listen, right. I don't work out any day, so.
Yeah, maybe I will. Maybe I will. I don't know.
Listen, any vice done in appropriate moderation is fine. Except crack or meth. That's
all right. And this concludes our conversation about the Lost Titan sub. I hope you guys got some good information out of this, and I hope you learned a bit more. And I hope you learned a bit more about submarines and, you know, just kind of how they operate, how things are supposed to operate. And yeah, so that's pretty much it. Go ahead and feel free to subscribe, no matter what platform you listen on. And feel free to give the podcast a rating, whatever you think it deserves. With that said, I have nothing more to add. So have a great day, everyone.